it's me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And for the first Abandoned Manitoba of March, we welcome Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
So, March, is it coming? Is this lion or lamb, given that it's so cold, but not very windy? Is it lioness or lambness?
I'm hoping lamb. I'm really getting tired of this.
Okay, what are we talking about this week?
Well, as listeners may know, I've published 5 books on Manitoba history, so I think I've earned a little bit of authority on what to do, and maybe more importantly, what not to do when it comes to getting a book into the hands of readers. Now, I'm not talking about the content itself. That's for the author to determine, but the process of creating the book itself, the long, occasionally joyful, occasionally maddening journey from an idea to a finished book. And who knows? Some of what I share today may inspire a few brave souls to take the plunge.
Well, it is getting easier and easier, I think, with technology, but we'll see. Where do we start?
Okay, well, we start with money. Mm-hmm. It's not glamorous, but it is the foundation of every book project, especially local history. A book may, I emphasize, may earn revenue someday, but that's a rarity. And unless you sell thousands of copies, which is unlikely for a Manitoba history book, it won't replace your day job. You need income, you know, while you research, while you write. And this may take months, depending on the subject, may even take years. And you need funds also to produce the book. Well, and there's also the cost to distribute a book. If you've ever mailed a book, you know mailing a book is expensive. Commercial publishers rarely bankroll local history. People sometimes ask me, well, can I find a publisher that will pay for some of these costs? Well, good luck. Not usually. So authors, therefore, have to rely on things like donations, loans, grants, the benevolence of strangers, community fundraising. You know, I really do have to gently disabuse anyone of the idea that writing books is a moneymaker. It, you know, they're labors of love, yes, and we enjoy doing it. I have had so much fun, but it's not a path to early retirement. If you're in it for the money, well, you may want to consider a different hobby. You know, maybe prospecting for gold.
Much gold is worth these days. That's good advice. So you talk about producing a book. What goes into producing a book?
After the research and writing is done, you know, when you think you're right near the end, well, there are still 3 main steps. And the first is editing. You know, that's a step that first-time authors often skip. They think, oh, my work is perfect. I don't need an editor. But, you know, editing is where the text becomes clearer, shorter, usually more readable, and definitely more polished. Nobody's words are perfect. And everyone, I say everyone, no matter how many books you've written, benefits from a good editor. And if you can't afford one, well, yes, AI tools can help tidy things up, and, you know, increasingly nowadays, but there's still no substitute for a human, because a human understands things like nuance, tone, the expectations of your audience. A good editor doesn't just fix the grammar. They may help you to say what you meant to say, but didn't quite say. And they're usually much more objective than you are.
And so that's step one. What about step two?
That is layout. You know, that's taking the text, the images, if you have them, and putting them on a page in a way that's attractive and easy to follow. Many authors think, oh, layout, it's just putting things on a page. But it's far more than that. Good layout guides the reader's eyes. It highlights important information, and it gives the book a professional look. Essentially, it's the difference between a book that invites you in and one that feels like homework.
And the third step?
That is reproduction. You know, taking the book and creating, well, either a paper book or a digital version. Now, as you said, today, many books are produced digitally, and that means that producing an e-book is, well, relatively easy and inexpensive. But there are advantages, of course. Digital books can include color, they can include hyperlinks, even animation. And of course, these are things that are either expensive or virtually impossible in a print book. But the downside of digital books is that they're easy to copy. You know, so if you're hoping to earn revenue, well, you got to think of those out there who might want to redistribute your book without paying you anything. Piracy can be a real factor. But for authors who simply want their work read, you know, if you're not really motivated by the money, well, I think digital publication may be a wonderful option.
Yeah. If you don't have a legit publisher or a, you know, a traditional type, who does all the work then for publishing?
Well, you pretty much have to do it yourself or find someone else to do it. You know, I've done much of the work on my books, doing some of the layout myself. I have volunteers, good friends who are vicious editors and are willing to help me with that. Sometimes you just have to buckle down and pay for the services of professionals. And costs can add up quickly. Several years ago, I worked with a community group that produced a history book about Delta Marsh. That's a large wetland on the south shore of Lake Manitoba, north of Portage la Prairie. And, you know, to help with the costs, we raised money over several years, mostly by having a fish fry on Canada Day. And that was so much fun. But we actually raised quite a bit of money, too. And we had professional layout done, and that cost over $6,000. And people go, what? $6,000? But I have to say, the book looked terrific. We ended up spending over $20,000 making copies. And, well, my wife wasn't terribly happy when we started that. But luckily, we sold them all, and we therefore got our money back. Didn't make a lot, but we didn't lose either.
And so when it comes to printing, where does that get done? How do you find a printer?
Well, I think you have to start by getting multiple quotes. Make sure that you're getting the right price for what you want. And to do that, you really have to know what the book is going to be. You know, you have to know about its physical size. What are the dimensions of the book? You need to know how many pages it has, whether it's full color or black and white. You know, what kind of paper? I never knew about all the nuances of paper. You know, whether you want glossy or matte paper. You know, what weight of paper. You know, whether it's going to be hardcover or softcover. Of course, there's a considerable price cost for hardcover, but of course, it makes for a much more durable book. And of course, crucially, I think the single most important factor is how many copies are you going to make?
Right. Costs more, right, to make more copies?
Well, yeah. In fact, but it's not quite as easy as this. Well, more copies, more money. There is a sliding scale between the per book cost and your print run. Essentially, the more books you print, the cheaper per book it gets. And authors agonize. You know, how many books should I make? Should I make lots? If you don't make enough, well, you risk selling out immediately. And then if you print more, well, you're going to pay a higher cost because your print run is small. A friend of mine printed 200 copies of a wonderful book about the Mennonite East Reserve here in Manitoba. Well, they sold out on launch night.
Wow.
He printed more. They sold out. In the end, he did 6 small print runs and he made, well, I mean, he may have made a little profit, but he certainly didn't make a lot. And had he known if he could have made one print run of a much larger size, his per book cost would have dropped considerably.
Right.
And he might have actually made a little profit. But, you know, that's just the struggle you have to have. And if you have a publisher, well, they take that trouble. But if you're doing it yourself, well, then it's on you.
Why not find out, like, what the market is out there, taking advance orders or something like that?
Absolutely. And, of course, taking an advance order gives you an additional source of revenue. You can reduce your upfront costs. It also helps you gauge demand. If you put out a call for advance orders and nobody, you know, bites, well, then maybe you should print very many copies. They also, of course, help build awareness. It's a good publicity tool. But they do come with a responsibility. And I know of at least one case where advance orders for a local history book were taken, money was collected, and no book ever appeared. And what I think is worse, no refunds were ever issued. And, well, that gives you a reputation that I don't think anyone wants.
Right.
Especially when we live in a province where it seems everyone knows everyone else's cousin.
Yeah, bad reputation out there waiting to happen if you're going to be taking people's money and stuff.
Yep,
so,
yep.
Good advice. So, do you have any final wrap-up advice for somebody who's like a prospective author out there?
Well, I think the key is know your audience. You know, make sure the book has the content they want in a format they want at a price they're willing to pay. And you have to be honest with yourself. Will people buy this book? You know, if the audience is small, online publication may be the best route, you know, without all the additional costs of making a physical book. You know, and some authors even choose to make their work available for free. You know, so for example, the Manitoba Historical Society that I work with, mm-hmm. we host, of course, a website. And one of the things on our website is we have an area called Memoirs. And basically what it is, it's a collection of documents that people have given to us to share with everyone. In other words, there's no cost to access these. They're just there. And they're right as of now, there's about 40, 45 documents there, varying lengths. Some of them are short. Some of them are really long. In fact, the most recent edition, which happened about a month ago, is an 18-pager. So not a big book, from a fellow who grew up in the village of Cartwright in southwestern Manitoba in the 1950s. And after he passed away, his family wanted that memoir to survive. They wanted others to enjoy it if they had an interest in Cartwright. And so they asked us, would we host it? And absolutely we would. So it's now on that site. If you go to mhs.ca/memoirs, they're all there. And believe me, there's wonderful reading there. You know, so we're happy to host that document. We're happy to host any document. So if any of our listeners out there have a memoir or they know of somebody who's got a local history book that they just want to share with people, but they don't know how to go about doing it and they don't want to spend a whole lot of money, well, contact me. Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, at mhs.mb.ca. And, you know, that's the real heart of this matter. You know, it doesn't, to me, matter if you print several thousand copies or you simply post online a PDF file. You know, either way, you are, in my view, contributing substantially to preserving Manitoba's story. You know, and I think that preservation and sharing is worth every hour, every heartache along the way.
That's what got you here in the first place, Gordon.
It is. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for that. What do you got for next week?
Listeners may recall that a few weeks ago, I asked for them to share ideas about items that would be completely unfamiliar to
yes.
younger generations. And wow, did the responses pour in. So next week, I'm going to share some of those suggestions. And I already suspect this is a topic that's going to take a few weeks. So we may have to come back to it in a future episode. So, well, stay tuned.
Can't wait for that. Thanks, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.